Bitcoin absolutely is as significant an invention as the clock. It is probably more on par with the printing press or the wheel or fire. This is an idea that can reconceptualize the entire way we think about the variable value of time. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. This is episode number 99, and I'm stepping back into a solo episode to share a few more ideas, things that I've been thinking about a lot lately. And I wanted to start with a conversation about an essay that I came across recently while I've been working on some revisions to my book, The Tao of Bitcoin. It's something that was written in 1944 by an economist named George Woodcock, and the essay is called The Tyranny of the Clock. Now, we've all kind of heard this phrase, time is money. Everybody's heard the phrase, time is money. And Bitcoin podcasts, including this one, we tend to talk a lot about money and monetary concepts and economy, macroeconomy, how banking works. And you might be thinking to yourself, like, you know, what does this have to do with time other than the fact that we obviously think about the value of things, including time, as being priced in dollars, or we think of these things in monetary terms. And I think that this is really a great launch point for an interesting discussion about some of the ideas that this essay has really got me thinking about as it relates to Bitcoin. And so to start with what the essay is arguing, or where he observes, is, you know, in the Bitcoin world, we often talk about significant events in the history of money. And so we hear a lot about what happened in 1971 as an example. And 1971 was when then President Richard Nixon severed formally the relationship between money and gold by temporarily, but as we know, there is nothing more permanent than a temporary government measure, temporarily ending gold redemptions from the U.S. Federal Reserve, from international foreign banks. And in the time since, in sort of the 50 plus years since, this is a global experiment of what we call fiat money, where really in the time since, money has just essentially become entirely credit. And the money system, the money supply has, during that time, continually expanded at an accelerating rate. And what we have observed in the time since is, you know, the price of desirable assets, things like houses, have gotten farther and farther out of reach. And the purchasing power of, you know, our spending power with the dollar has continually declined. So, you know, everyone knows that a meal at McDonald's or a movie or whatever things you might be consuming day to day had been, you know, those things have all been observably becoming more expensive over time. And certainly, over the last 5 years, that problem has really accelerated. And today it's impossible to ignore. Everybody understands that the price of eggs is three times what it was 5 years ago, regardless of whatever the government media tells you inflation is. And so that was a really significant event that I think we are still trying to wrap our minds around what it really meant for society and where we are headed. We use money as a tool to make sense of the world around us. Money is a map. Money is a system that we use to arrange and order the value of things and the value of time so that we can trade those things and trade our time in a way that makes sense and people can kind of agree on. But the problem that really started to accelerate in 1971 is that the money aspect of that equation has been variable and sort of continually getting worse for the average user in the system. So if we go back a little bit further, another event that we talk about a lot in the history of money is 1913 and the creation of the Federal Reserve Bank in the US, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And I've talked many times about the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is a really great detailing of the events that led up to the installation of a central bank in the United States. And it was the third attempt. The first two had failed. And central banks, including the Fed, are private banks that are misrepresented as public institutions and arms of the government. But, you know, we often hear people wondering, you know, like, if the world globally is in $400 trillion of debt, like, who do we owe all this money to? And we owe it to central banks, in part. So the creation of the Federal Reserve Bank was a really important step that eventually enabled what happened in 1971 and set in motion the system where the relationship between currency and what was then gold, the thing, the underlying thing of real value, could become farther and farther apart until it was eventually severed. And if we go back even further, you know, the invention of paper money was an innovation that enabled us to move money more quickly beyond the physical limitations of precious metals, particularly gold. Gold is really heavy and difficult to move in scale. And you have to protect it. And this is part of the reason why, you know, physical banks evolved the way they did in earlier days, because they needed to be safe. And as the banks ultimately consolidated this influence over gold, this is when we started to see paper, which was originally just meant to be a representation of gold, start to become more of an abstraction and have less and less of a meaningful connection to the underlying thing that was supposed to be determining what it was worth. Back to George Woodcock. So Woodcock argues that there was actually a much more significant event leading to the world of today than either of these things. And this is kind of why I think this is an interesting topic, because we do, in these kind of Bitcoin discussions, tend to really focus on these significant monetary events. And kind of the underlying assumption often is the case that money is such a dominant and universal way that people sort of communicate and have this like shared understanding of how we make sense of the world around us, that money is the core thing that's driving kind of all of these negative social outcomes and just challenges with things that are, you know, like, why aren't we today sort of living in something that looks more like the world of the Jetsons, where all of the technological innovations and all of the productivity gains that we're achieving as a result of even new technologies, things like AI, why is that not translating into abundance for everyone? We should all be living in paradise. There should be plenty of everything for everyone. Technology innately makes things cheaper and easier to produce over time. And if it didn't, we wouldn't adopt that technology. And this is really the core thesis in Jeff Booth's incredible book, The Price of Tomorrow, where that was my sort of introduction to Bitcoin. I really recommend that book all the time. It's not really a Bitcoin book, it's a technology book. And Jeff's argument is that the nature of technology itself is deflationary. And so that we should, as a result of the continual forward innovation and progress in technology, all of us should be experiencing an increasing level of abundance and a gradual easing of how hard life is. But observably, we all know that's not true. And it's because we exist in a money system that siphons out those productivity gains before they have the opportunity to drop all the way down to the end user, to the person who is trying to survive inside that monetary matrix. So the tyranny of the clock makes another argument, which I think is really interesting and is worth considering. Tyranny of the clock makes the argument that all of this would not have been made possible without first the invention of the mechanical clock, which happened in 1657. And so if we go all the way back to 1657, this invention fundamentally changed the way that we interacted with and understood time itself. And so maybe just to like pause and think about that, before the mechanical clock would have existed, time would have been natural. This would have been something that we observed in the world around us. So we would have had a rough idea of what time it was based on where the sun was in the sky. We would have, you know, been paying attention to the seasons. We would have, you know, woken up when the sun came up and gone to bed when it went dark. And there really wouldn't have been this sense of knowing what time it was to a precise minute or you know, the ability to have a rigid schedule of things. Time would have been fluid and really just grounded in life. And so Woodcock argues that the mechanical clock enabled for the first time the ability for us to create sort of a system where exact time could be turned into a thing that was broadly understood. We started talking in these uniform terms, the same way we do with money, about seconds and minutes and hours. And as a result of that, it really birthed an entirely new way of thinking, where time became a construct that we sort of all agreed to. And he takes it a step further and makes the suggestion that as a result of this, we all ended up becoming slaves to this clock. Because what he goes on to say is that the chief ingredient in the Industrial Revolution, which was really the broad mechanization of human civilization, it was the ability for the first time to treat humans' time as a commodity. And if we just think about that for a second, what it would have meant is that this was now the first time in history where everything could be synchronized and scheduled. And so factories needed to schedule their labor and measure it out like it was an input component of the individual industry. And then schools did the same. Schools run on rigid time. And they certainly did when I was in school. They start at certain times, you know, when your breaks are, you know, when your lunch is, you know, when the day's over. You're really having this drilled into you even as a little kid. And as that concept became kind of more ubiquitous and ingested into just our unconscious way of building society, offices, armies, everything, trains, everything started to run on time. And, you know, in this way, what we really did was transition from a world where we were kind of living in natural law to having a man-made, a machine measuring time. And, you know, I think that what's really profound about this idea is a time for all of us, in my opinion, is like the only thing that is unarguably more valuable than money itself. And this is kind of why we say time is money, because, you know, you can always make more money, but none of us know exactly how much time we have. And we all know that we only have a fixed amount of it. And so I think it's just a really fascinating idea that before any of these innovations were happening in banking and finance, the world itself was starting to align to a new way of thinking about time. And where I think this comes together, and when it started to get really slippery, was when we go back to 1913. So the world would have already had a few hundred years to have time sort of be the constant in an equation. And we really do think about this thing right now. I think like this will make sense as we move through the idea, but time was minutes and seconds and hours since the advent of the mechanical clock are a measurement that have not changed. And there aren't in time, like we don't have the imperial system and the metric system where people on some other part of Earth are using different measurements than hours, seconds, and minutes. So time hasn't changed. Money has. Money has changed a lot, certainly in the last 110 years. And what happened when we introduced central banking into a world where time was the thing that didn't change is that we have a variable value in the thing that we are using to price and understand time. And where it gets really slippery is when we take that a step further and acknowledge that most people broadly don't understand how central banking and the continual expansion of the money supply creates a variable and ultimately declining value of time. And this is the thing that I think has really not been talked about enough. And it's sitting right in front of our faces, but we just really haven't put two and two together to say that the standard measurement of time, when combined with measuring the world in a monetary system where the unit of account continually becomes worth less and less, demands that all of us over our lives receive less and less for the units of time that never change and actually become more and more precious to us as our life forwardly progresses towards its end. Hey everyone, quick question. Have you ever thought about starting a video podcast like this one? I want to introduce you to the team behind my show, Podigy. This podcast has been one of the best marketing tools for our business, and thanks to Podigy, all I have to do is hit record. They handle everything else, editing, writing, publishing, and making sure that it's perfectly optimized for every platform. They only work with disruptors, mavericks, and change makers, people making a real difference, spreading big ideas. Typically, Podigy is fully booked, but right now they have a few spots open for new clients. Listeners of this show get 10% off launching their own podcast or optimizing their current one. Click the link in the bio for a free one-on-one podcast planning session with Podigy. If you are thinking about starting a podcast or you have one and you want to take it to the next level, I can't recommend Podigy enough. Check them out. So what are we doing when we're trying to work? We are transforming our energy and time, some mix of our energy and time, into a financial tool so that we can hopefully turn it back into something that we can consume or enjoy at a distant point in the future. And that point in the future could be like immediate. You get your paycheck and you pay for your rent right then. Or if you're able to save, you want that money to retain its energy and the value of the time you spent to earn it, so that when you go to convert it again back into consume it, that there's an equivalent or maybe even more value, like that it may even have accrued value. And that's kind of the, you know, how I think we could think of the problem that investing has been trying to solve for people. It's really about creating an ability for people to store their time effectively. And so I think there are a lot of really interesting discussions about time and Bitcoin. I'm not the first person to talk about this. And there's a really famous Bitcoiner named DG who wrote something called Bitcoin is Time, I believe in 2021. And Bitcoin is Time is a really great and very thought-provoking and expansive discussion about some of these ideas. Because Bitcoin also has time as an input component in how the system works. Bitcoin is a clock. It's just a clock that works differently than the mechanical clock that was invented in 1657. Bitcoin's clock runs on blocks and difficulty adjustment periods, which happen roughly every 2 weeks, and epochs, which happen every 4 years. And an epoch is the cycle in which the block reward, which is paid out every time a Bitcoin block is created every roughly 10 minutes, reduces by 50%. And so on the Bitcoin clock, the increments don't change, but the amount of real-world time that it takes for them to happen does. So we don't know how much work is required to create any individual block. And the average time is around 10 minutes, but one block might take 7 minutes and another block might take an hour. So we don't know that. The fixed part in the Bitcoin clock equation is the money part. And that's scheduled. So the block reward is predetermined and it decreases by 50% every 4 years at a fixed rate that will never change. This is a transparent and universally acknowledged aspect of Bitcoin. This is a hard-coded rule in the Bitcoin network that absolutely will never change. So we know what the value of a block is today, and we know what the value of a block will be in 2056. We don't know what the value of that block will be in dollars, because the value of dollars is always changing and it's always going down. So we really don't know how little a dollar will be worth in 2056. but we know how much Bitcoin it will be worth. And this is the beauty of Bitcoin, because we know that the Bitcoin that are associated with a block as a percentage of the total amount of Bitcoin can never change. And this is this really elegant thing where I think that Bitcoin presents the opportunity to really kind of end the tyranny of the clock. Because in this tyrannical system where we measure absolute time using a measurement stick that degrades as time moves forward, there is theoretically no end to how little your time could be worth. And we already kind of understand this now today. I think there's a lot of different ways that this behavior kind of like manifests and exhibits. If you just think about it, like, you know, in the work world, we measure the amount of money that we make in a year. And we want that money, we want that amount to go up. And it's partly because I think we all understand on some level that we need to continually make more and more money, knowing that the price of things is going to be more expensive in the future, because that's something that already all of us have experienced throughout our entire lives. And when we think about consuming money, it's pretty normal for a big purchase to think about how long you're going to have to save to be able to afford that thing. Or, you know, if you're going to do something that takes a certain amount of time, you're going to think about, you know, what's the relationship between the price of that thing and how much time enjoyment I'm going to get out of it. You know, so like a movie was $5 when I was a kid and it's $18 today. And those movies are still 2 hours long. So there's some kind of an economic calculation that happens when I think about going to a movie and whether or not I think that 2 hours is going to be worth $18, because the value of the thing we're using to measure those 2 hours has changed. And so there's another concept in Bitcoin called time preference. Time preference is the idea that it's a measurement of your urgency to do something with your money. So a high time preference means that you have a high degree of urgency to do something with your money now. And the reason that you need to do that with your money is because you may understand that if you don't buy the thing you want to buy today, if you go to buy it tomorrow, it may end up costing you more. And so you need to consume that money. That money becomes like fuel. And so you burn it now. And this causes us to make short-term decisions and sort of like utilize the financial energy that we have while we can. And this is a problem that is as true for individuals as it is as for societies. So our society has really emulated this way of thinking. And, you know, we can see in the buildings that we build where it's really become more about completing projects rapidly, using materials efficiently to try and retain margin as the cost of labor and input goods go up. And so we've sort of become a society building disposable buildings, whereas like 250, 300, 500 years ago, we used to build permanent buildings that would last for 1,000 years. And that was just a way of, you know, that could be a way of thinking about manifesting an understanding of time differently. You know, when we didn't know time exactly, we would have been building things to a different clock. And it's not just buildings. You know, I think another obvious example for me of where this problem really shows through is in food. And we have juiced all of the nutrition out of food to factory produce these things that relate to margin. And we are now all really having a massive health crisis as a result of us having a disposable diet, having, you know, fast food. So these are big problems that are downstream of this relationship between absolute time and degrading money. It's a all-encompassing thought paradigm, and I think that you can't really consider one without considering the other. So low time preference is the opposite. Low time preference is when you have the ability to store that time and energy, you have not only a less incentive to consume that money now, but actually the longer you wait, the more benefit it will be to your future self. And this is actually what people who have been saving in Bitcoin have been experiencing over the last 15 years. And it has been true on just about every time frame. Even as Bitcoin's annual returns have gone from the insanely spectacular to the still better than everything else you could possibly do with your money. If your thing that you're using to store your financial energy is increasing at a rate much, much faster than the real rate that the value of government money is evaporating, then you're still appreciating your time. And that's a really important thing, I think, for people to be thinking about as they're conceptualizing what do you do with Bitcoin. You're already today trading your time and energy for money. What we're all doing unconsciously is trading it for money that we know is engineered to become worth less. There's nothing broken about the monetary system or the banking system. This is the system that was initiated in 1913 with the creation of the Federal Reserve. The system is working perfectly. That system aggregates wealth at the top, and it does that by confiscating the value of the people at the bottom of the pyramid by continually issuing more money while we don't have any ability to issue more time. None of us can say, oh, I'm going to live an extra 50 years, so it's fine that my money's being devalued. Our time is finite. And as the relationship between the amount of money and that finite time changes, it's theft. And it is the theft of our time. And we should really think about it in that way. And so for people who experience low time preference as the result of understanding Bitcoin and leveraging it as a tool for saving, they really are appreciating their time. And it absolutely forces a reconsideration of how you consume your financial energy, the things that you spend your time and energy doing for fun. And it's a reverse calculation. So, you know, in the fiat world where our money's becoming worth less, and I think people will all understand this is true, we have less and less free time to spend thoughtlessly. So whereas we used to maybe watch a movie for 2 hours without really thinking about it, today, if you're scrolling on TikTok and something doesn't catch your attention in the first 3 seconds, you're swiping to the next thing. And for some people, you know, if you're watching Netflix, you might also be scrolling Twitter. You know, like we're really trying to spend what the little time we have as preciously as we can. Whereas there's a sense of peace that comes along with understanding a financial tool that enables you to safely reconvert that time and energy back into something for you to use in the future. So that you want to be really thoughtful about when you do that, what you're doing. So the opposite calculation could be true. You may instead think, do I want to watch this 22-minute episode of a show on Netflix? Or do I want to go spend 4 hours climbing a mountain? It's going to take me 8 times as long, and it's going to be 1,000 times more enjoyable. This is kind of high time preference thinking. And in the same way, it applies at a society level. And this is what I think gets Bitcoiners really excited, is the idea of, what does a world look like where enough of us have removed ourselves from this tyranny of the clock that we can start to think about envisioning a world together where we're thinking long term and we're making decisions that have the future truly in mind, so that we can again start thinking about building beautiful buildings and growing really great food and doing the things that I think intuitively we were actually doing before 1657 that really prepped us to the point of civilization being ready to transition through industrialization and arrive us where we are now. I'm a history student. My bachelor's degree was in history. I've been studying the rise and falls of civilization my entire life. I played Sid Meier's Civilization when I was a kid. And, you know, society and civilization is not a continual forward march of never-ending progress. There are ebbs and flows. And many of those cycles throughout history have been much longer than an individual human lifespan. So each of us only gets to see a small sliver. We never get to be alive for the entire thing. And that's what makes it tough, because I think we all sort of naturally want to equate these processes to whatever we'll be able to experience it within our own lifetime personally. But I think if you zoom out and think about humanity in centuries or longer, you know, we would have been thinking about what the world would have been like as it was evolving towards the invention of the clock. And then this period that's happened in the time since and the subsequent innovation of central banking. And I think we're headed for another swing of the pendulum now, where a new innovation, a new invention, and that's Bitcoin, is something that will fundamentally change our perception of time. Bitcoin will be as influential. And this is not to say that our future world selves are going to start ignoring hours and seconds. But I think that the world today has evolved to reflect an innate understanding that the chief commodity in our disposable world is time. It's the most important input because we can create a never ending amount of money. So money actually doesn't matter. And in the new world, the amount of money can never change. And so there's a really fixed relationship between actual time and the total amount of money. So it becomes the basis just for a much, much more rational and sensible foundation for civilization. This is a fundamentally different way of viewing the world. And it's a 0-to-1 shift. Like Bitcoin absolutely is as significant an invention as the clock. It is probably more on par with the printing press or the wheel or fire. This is an idea that can reconceptualize the entire way we think about the variable value of time. And again, you know, for each of us, and then for all of us as a collective, time is the most valuable thing we have. So I'm going to stop there. I mentioned at the outset, it's episode 99. It's hard to believe that we've been at this for 2 years. And during that time, we've had so many incredible guests and all of the different people that I'm fans of and have personally felt fortunate to have been able to meet along the way. And I want to thank all of the guests who have come on. I really want to thank all the listeners. I so appreciate everybody who enjoys tuning in. And it's been a real treat. The feedback that we've got along the way, Block Rewards, the company has done a lot of growing in the last 2 years. We've just launched our enterprise version of Bitcoin Savings Plan Canada-wide, and we are shooting for a launch in the US sometime this fall. And maybe I'll just talk about that for a second. I think that the way that we think about time and its relationship to value will be equally transformative in the workplace. And this is exactly what we're trying to do with Block Rewards, is give employers and employees a broader understanding of how businesses could run better when you can operate in a form of money that retains its value or even appreciates in value instead of becoming worth and worth less. So today, businesses need to pay people more every year because the money is going down in value and employees expect more. And that's nobody's fault, but it is just the way our money works. And for our customers, like we have Bitcoin Savings Plan customers at Block Rewards who've been running an earlier version of our software for the last few years. And their employees who have been saving in Bitcoin during that time have experienced an incredible appreciation of the monetary value that they'd earned as a result of their employment relationship. And so it's an incredible tool. And we're really excited to be transplanting some of these ideas that I've been sharing throughout the course of this episode into software tools that companies can use to start changing the way they help their employees plan for the future. And for employees, you know, like we want to help by making it easier for you to expect to be able to earn some Bitcoin, whatever amount you're comfortable with, wherever you work. And this is something that I think should be absolutely normal. And this is why we've taken the leap to try and go out into the world and convince companies that they should be doing this. So we're going to take a little bit of a hiatus and be back sometime in the fall with episode 100. So I want to thank you again for tuning in if you made it all the way to the end of the episode. And I hope to see you when we're back live. And that's all for now.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.